dare you not vote for Clinton. That's fine. They can yell. You're not going to convince them. But there's a lot of other people that don't vote, a lot of independents, a lot of people that are attracted by the Stein campaign, a lot of people that see through lesser evilism and want to do something but aren't clear on what to do. And those are the people we can talk to, and those are the people that we can get involved with. The fact that, yes, to build a party for the 99%, a party, a working class party, a party for working people, it will take defying liberal orthodoxy that emanates from, again, satisfaction with the status quo and pro-capitalism, to defy that and to lose elections and to build painstakingly the forces from many different angles and many different constituencies, quote-unquote, into a movement for a party independent financially of big business and the corporations, and independent as much as possible ideologically as well, where the needs of the working class would be the driving force, not the needs of the corporations and the super elite, less than 1%, etc. So, anyway, we're going to move on now to some other things that are related to what we were just talking about. But I want to just give our legal identification here. We are WMFO Medford. I don't know why I do the WMFO too fast. So it's WMFO Medford, WMFO in Medford, also known as Tufts Freeform Commercial Free Community Based Radio, also known as Tufts Educational Radio. And you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio, a slice of that community base. We're going to take a break for some announcements and music, and we'll be right back with more revolutionary socialist information for you. So just hold on.
Here at WMFO, we like to ask the important questions, such as, why freeform? Well, it's been our tradition now for 45 years, and none of us here want to see that change anytime soon. Do you? If not, we need your help to keep WMFO freeform by contributing to our annual donations drive. Anytime before April 13th, go over to donate.wmfo.org to support us in reaching our $5,000 goal. You will even receive a unique thank you gift. To see more about what our DJs have to say about keeping WMFO freeform, visit facebook.com/WMFO Medford. That's facebook.com/WMFO Medford. Here at WMFO.
Lunch bell ring, take 1 hour, do y'all fine? bodies on the pavement. Now the news has leapt to attention. Lunar landing of the dentist convention. Italian monster shoots a lobster. See-through restaurant gets out of hand. Car in the fridge, a fridge in the car. My cowboy's doing TV land. Sweat some more. The sun will sink and we'll get out the door. It's no good for man to work in cages. Hit the town, he drinks his wages. You're threatened, you're sweating. But did you notice you ain't getting? You're threatened, you're sweating. But did you notice not getting anywhere? Don't you ever stop long enough to start. Take your car out of that gear. Don't you ever stop long enough to start. Get your car out of that gear. Call the marks, a fire and Engels came to the checkout at the 7-Eleven. Marks was good, but he has sense. Engels lent him the necessary bends. What do we got? Yeah. What do we got? Yeah. What do we got? Magnificent. What do we got? Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi went to the park to check on the game, but they was murdered by the other team. Went on to win 50-0. You can be true, you can be false, you'll be given the same reward. Socrates and Milhouse Dixon both went the same way through the kitchen. Plato the Greek or in Tin Tin. Who's more famous to the billion millions? Who's Flash? Vacuum cleaner sucks up Budgie.
Yeah, the only band that ever mattered, The Clash. And that's a special request. Well, not request, but especially dedicated to one of the ex-co-hosts of Socialist Alternative Radio, Chris, who complains every once in a while on Facebook that we play The Clash too much on Socialist Alternative Radio. And to that, we plead guilty. We should have played Police and Thieves, I realize, but I just wanted to get that one out. Magnificent Seven. It used to be kind of a theme song of the show when we used to be on early in the morning way, way back. We've been on the air 10 years at WMFO, so I want to thank everyone that supported us. Check us out on Facebook, Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. And also we want to thank Phoenian Rising on Facebook and PhoenianRising.org on the internet for downloading our shows without our begging them to do so or even asking them to do so. They just like the show. Thank you very much for liking the show and they have created a somewhat of a record, maybe great record, actually, of all the previous shows going back many, many years. And here at WMFO, you can go to WMFO.org, go to schedules and listen to at least the last show archived. I wish that more shows could be archived. I guess they can't be right now. And since we are on every other week, every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., you only get that one show archived per cycle or whatever. Of only two shows being able to be archived and starting again. You just heard, by the way, The Magnificent Seven by The Clash off of their album Sandinista. I saw on Facebook a guy on the left named Dan Labatz. He ran for senator for federal Senate, like, you know, senator in Congress in Ohio a few years ago, and did fairly well. Had a good campaign. From what I could tell, you know, obviously very grassroots, but got a high percentage of the vote. And that's a good segue into our next topic here. We're having a quick report here on another victory, because there have been a string of them, by a socialist member and socialist alternative member and Seattle City Councilor. Yes, you heard that correctly. Shama Sawant. And Shama spells her name K-S-H-A-M-A, last name Sawant, S-A-W-A-N-T. Now, Shama, if you're a regular to the show, you've heard this, but bear with me for 1 second just to give some context here. Shama is an open socialist, open member of Socialist Alternative, who ran for office around 2011, I think it was, for state legislature, lost but got 35% of the vote, which woke up a lot of people to the potential of a socialist candidate. Everywhere, actually, for us, but in Seattle especially. And so Shama volunteered to run again. And that was part of a discussion and so on. And Shama volunteered to run again, this time for city council. And in late 2012, won, took office in 2013, immediately used one of the main campaign demands of the Shama Sawant city council drive, a $15 minimum wage, to help organize and lead a $50 minimum wage struggle in Seattle, which won. Seattle was the first city in the country to get a $50 minimum wage law passed. It had some drawbacks, but overall, it's already brought tens of thousands of workers into the category of making $50 minimum wage, and is continuing to do that. And that's the drawback. It kind of had some, but now they all have this, unfortunately, delayed period of implementation. So some of it went in immediately, some of it is being dragged out, and this was unfortunately a byproduct of some labor leaders tied to the Democratic Party and the Democratic Party itself, initially against $50 minimum wage coming on board, but only in a way to water it down. And we had to make the difficult decision of whether to support the general drift and the gains that would be made from getting that law passed back in 2014, I believe it was. Or you know, oddly go on record as voting against a good overall thing, although again watered down. And so we voted for it. We were putting forward up to the last minute ways that it would be implemented more directly for everyone, but that didn't work totally. But it was still a big step forward, and it initiated a lot of publicity, obviously. A lot of it didn't go into the details, good or bad, but went into the basic point, $50 minimum wage. And it's continued to generate some media in the sense that Seattle is actually having an economic boom, and the $50 minimum wage has not hurt small businesses and all that other propaganda thrown at $15 minimum wage or any increase in minimum wage by the right wing. The exact opposite is often the case, because it increases the buying power of working people, obviously, who even the corporate media admits are the main consumers. 80% of consumer spending is from workers. Shama Sawant, Social Alternative, and others having a platform of the city council as open socialists, having the victory of a $50 minimum wage law successfully gained. There's many, many other issues that Shama and the movement in Seattle and Social Alternative have been fighting for, like, for example, in Indigenous Rights Day instead of Columbus Day, a lot of tenants' rights struggles, and we're going to get into more of that in a few minutes, and winning a lot of these smaller battles that don't get the same press necessarily, helping the Boeing workers fight Boeing and so on. Helping teachers with their strike that they went on successfully, that the Seattle Public School teachers. And then there's another issue that just arose that the Democrats in Seattle, along with the Democrats in the city council, the Democratic Party elites and so on, wanted to, and others wanted to build this huge police bunker. And let me just give you some context here from an article by Tom Bernard, September 23rd, Counterpunch, Block the Bunker, historic victory against police boondoggle in Seattle. And in Seattle, a historic struggle has defeated plans to build a $160 million police station, the most expensive in the country. Supporting it were the vast majority of Seattle's political leadership, including 7 out of 8 city council members and the mayor, all Democrats. Opposing it were Black Lives Matter activists, Socialist Alternative, and council member Shama Sawant, and a vast growing network of outraged activists and citizens. And to the surprise of even some of these those opponents, they prevailed, forcing the proposal to be killed in its present form, and I'll get more into that in a second. Now, here's an article from socialistalternative.org. Victory, Seattle blocks police bunker, victory rally, and rally to build 1,000 homes instead, September 22nd. So the rally's already happened. It was really successful. Bunker blocked, September 22nd. This is another thing for the rally. Let me just get into the text here a little bit. Councilmember Sawant celebrates movement's historic victory, blocking the bunker. Councilmember Shama Sawant, District 3, Central Seattle, issued the following statement in response to the announcement that the North Precinct Police Project station had been blocked. Quote, today in Seattle, anti-racist and social justice activists scored one of the most important victories nationally since the Black Lives Matter movement began in 2014. We have stopped Seattle's political establishment, the mayor, and the majority of the city council from wasting $160 million of public funds on further militarizing the police by building an extravagant and unneeded new police station. Those resources should instead be used to build 1,000 units of affordable housing. And in our current housing crisis, city officials should do that with all due haste. The mayor and the majority of city council have been forced to retreat from their previous insistence on building the most expensive precinct in the country because of the sustained and intense public opposition and protests. Block the Bunker organized major demonstrations, including a protest of 400 people opposing a pro-bunker resolution sponsored by Councilmember Gonzalez and supported by the majority of council. Activists questioned the mayor on his priorities at each of his speaking engagements, including James Kahn from my office during the Mayor Find It, Fix It walk in the Central District, and Rashad Barber at a recent fundraiser for activists opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline. My office organized a tour of the current North Precinct Police Station, along with activists from the Seattle King County NAACP, homeless advocates, housing providers, and socialists, along with members of the media, revealing the unnecessary nature of this huge expenditure. Our movement made it clear the establishment would face a ferocious challenge over where these resources would go. They would have to publicly explain why they thought an upscale new police station was more important than homes for 1,000 families. The mayor's press release made it very clear. He is still firmly committed to building a new North Police precinct and has only removed it from the 2017 budget due to intense community pressure. We need to step up the pressure and organize a strong enough movement to truly end this project and instead make sure the city's $160 million is used to build 1,000 affordable homes. By the way, I believe it's 1,000 affordable homes at that same place where they were going to put up the precinct. Join me at Washington Hall. Then there's an ad for the rally, which went well. Celebrate the victory, discuss how to build the movement. So that is a victory. It might only be a temporary victory, but it's a huge victory. Exposes the Democrats, exposes the police. And also there was this whole thing about this legalistic thing. Oh, you can't use the money that's earmarked for that, for building houses. But actually, quote from Joel Moreno, I think it's from a Seattle paper, but I don't have it didn't print out the citation. Como is the abbreviation, Como photo. Anyway, I don't know. It's some Seattle paper, September 23rd. City Council Member Shama Sawant wants to divert money that would have been used to build a new Seattle North Precinct into housing projects. Basically, she's found a way. She may have found a way. I'm paraphrasing here. State law bans those kind of transfers. You might want to ask yourself why. Mayor Ed Murray planned to use real estate excise taxes to cover most of the $149 million cost for the police bunker. However, state law limits these excise taxes revenues to things like transportation, public safety projects. Affordable housing isn't an option. You might want to ask yourself why that as well. Anyway, Sawant said, but my office has determined that the money can be used to build affordable housing. And the way that this can be done is shift the money meant for those projects. Use the money to pay for items already in the budget, such as roads, and then shift the money meant for those projects to affordable housing. And then an indigenous community activist said, I really love the idea of working on finding positive answers, solutions, and alternatives because it doesn't just go anti-bunker. Yeah, okay. So Watt then says, wants to take $15 million from the sale of Pacific Place Garage, as well as unload the $14 million parcel where the new North Precinct was supposed to be built. Meanwhile, the Democratic Senator Ed Murray, and they don't say Democrat here, but I threw that in, still believes there's a compelling need for a new police facility in North Seattle and remains committed to replacing the current building. So that fight continues, but that was a really good victory. And again, that article in Counterpunch is worth looking at. And it goes into more detail about who was involved, including Socialist Alternative. Actually, we led that. I don't know if he gives us that much credit, but we're in there. And really exposes the Democrats more in this article. Let's see. What this confrontation, I'll read one little excerpt from the Tom Bernard article here. What this confrontation has brought about is a direct challenge to the authority of the city council and the police force itself. The city council meeting the following Monday was again undone by BLM activists who carried out a combination of guerrilla theater and spirited denunciation of the city council and the police until once again the council fled the room. That's all except for Sharma, obviously. This simply promises to not only continue but widen. In fact, both the issue of building a new youth jail and the hiring of 200 more police officers supposedly done deals are back on the agenda, and Sawant, and he should add Socialist Alternative here, is leading a move towards redirecting much of the $160 million towards low-income affordable housing, a perennial demand in a city with skyrocketing rents. An upcoming town hall she is organizing, that's Sharma Sawant, to get that into the budget, promises to be well attended. So that's a victory for the socialism, the left, Socialist Alternative, the people, Black Lives Matter, indigenous rights activists, et cetera, in Seattle. And it's related, obviously, to the militarization of the police and the other issues we talked about earlier. Hey, locally here, and I know this is a show due to the internet that goes out internationally, but I'm going to go local here on Socialist Alternative Radio and talk about a struggle at Harvard University where I work. Now, my union leadership, unfortunately, without reason, caved into Harvard's demands to offload more and more healthcare costs onto my shoulders, onto the workers at Harvard that are in the Clerical and Technical Workers Union. This was a big crime. I voted against the contract that had that concession in it. And one of the crimes of that, which, of course, leadership didn't bother to explain to the members, who did overwhelmingly vote for the contract, and I stand proudly against that stream, because what Harvard, of course, did was they went to the next union, and the union should all be working together, never have at Harvard. They went to the next union and did the same exact concessions onto this other union, which is Local 26 of HERE, Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union, and Unite Here, Local 26. And they, of course, Harvard then, you know, getting the concession from one union, the biggest union on campus, goes to the smaller unions for the same concession, and it hits the smaller unions really hard, just like it's hitting us, and they can't afford it. So what we have is a struggle happening at Harvard among dining hall workers against the university's attempt to make them a much poorer group of workers. And this is after decades of attacks off and on. Sometimes the union representing dining hall workers makes some gains, then they're taken away, and then they make some gains. It's been a really tough struggle over the years I've witnessed and been involved with tangentially, somewhat, you know, what I mean by tangentially is I'm not in the union, but I've gone to protest rallies and been at meetings and stuff for the dining hall workers at Harvard. And they've sometimes had leadership that has, you know, mobilized them to be very vocal, and this seems to be the case again, and that's good. And they're getting a lot of student support, which is really good. In fact, I've got some really interesting solidarity stuff here to report on. And basically the gist, I think the articles will get into a little bit, so I'll just give a quick quote. This is from the Harvard Crimson, which is the Harvard student newspaper, but it's well-funded, comes out, you know, basically daily when school's in session. And I think they actually came out, and this is very unusual for the Crimson, they came out in support of the dining hall workers themselves. Now, what they're reporting on in this article is Harvard Law School. A bunch of Harvard Law School groups, quote, blast Harvard for contract stalemate with its dining workers. And this is from the 22nd of September. 15 student groups from Harvard Law School issued a statement on their website reproaching Harvard's bargaining record with its dining hall workers, characterizing the ongoing stalemate in HUDs, Harvard Union Dining Hall Services, most recent round of contract talks, as a class and racial justice struggle. And they are quite right about that. Sorry for the shuffling of papers here. I have a bunch of different articles. I'm just quoting little excerpts from a few of them. The university does not meet, has not met their demands for wage increases, and the university has altered health care benefits, chalking, and this resulted in a 591-18 vote last Thursday to approve a strike if necessary. Now, through their contract, which was originally extended from mid-June, expired last week, the union does continue to meet with Harvard negotiators, and they have a final bargaining session on September 27th. A federal mediator is there in the bargaining talks, and the groups wrote, "We, the students of Harvard Law School, refuse to abandon HUD's workers in their struggle for justice." Signatories include groups like Reclaim Harvard Law, who have been rallying for increased and diversified faculty and students, as well as BGLTQ group, Lambda at Harvard Law School, Harvard Chapter of the National Lawyers Guild, etc. The statement is the latest show of support for the dining hall workers and students from the Harvard Medical and Dental Schools rallied in support. This is doctors and dentists rallied in, soon to be, rallied in support of the dining hall workers in Longwood, which is a part of the Harvard campus in the Fenway, Boston area. Near Fenway, and a petition disseminated by a group of undergraduates had garnered more than 2,400 signatures at the time of the strike vote for the workers. Now, that's significant, too, because undergraduates are not that, there's not that many at Harvard, so 2,400 signatures is actually quite good. Harvard deeply values, blah, 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 that's the university propaganda. We hear enough of that, and you're not going to hear it on this show. We deeply value this, this, and that, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. Now under the healthcare change proposed by Harvard, the richest university in the world, I threw that in. Dining hall employees will see their healthcare costs rise at an average of $11 a month. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. That's from the university. That's still part of their propaganda. So it's more than that, actually, a lot more. The groups, okay. So also, Harvard has just raised over $7 million, soon to be up to $9 billion, and it's a fundraising drive. That's on top of an endowment. Last count, I think, was approaching $40 billion. And that doesn't mention, as I've said on the show before when Harvard has come up, the many that I've personally researched, the many income streams going into Harvard through its vast real estate holdings, its direct investments in businesses. The whole nonprofit thing is a real joke, by the way. It's branding money. It's money from the government for all sorts of things. It's tuition, of course. But what people don't understand is there's all these other income streams that you can also have. They have donations that don't go into the endowment. They have donations called gifts that go, which is basically money that goes to schools directly rather than going to the Harvard endowment, et cetera. They're just swimming in so much money that they're laughing all the way to the bank, literally, when they don't understand. They're laughing all the bank because people, it's never clear, usually not a clear publication. If there is, it doesn't get disseminated widely of just how much money Harvard has. And they keep it secret to a certain extent. It's a privately held corporation. Healthcare concerns have been the leading topic of discussion during the course of negotiations. Harvard offered its dining workers the same plan extension with large unions, HCW. That plan eliminated deductibles in favor of moderately increasing co-payments. No, they're not moderately increasing. I can say that right now. And that's what they're trying to force down on these workers. Now, here's one other interesting letter of solidarity that can impact the strike if one happens. Local 25, the Teamsters, which delivers all the food into Harvard, which the dining hall workers use, they are, I'm assuming, by the way, that it delivers all the food. I could be wrong about that, but I think it delivers a lot of it. They put an open letter into the Crimson, which the Crimson published, quote, letter to the editor of Local 25, that's a Teamster, supports the Harvard dining hall workers. This is by Sean O'Brien, president of the Teamsters Local 25. I applaud the Crimson's editorial board for standing shoulder to shoulder with the Harvard University dining hall service workers. In a recent editorial, the dining workers at Harvard University transform institution into a home for students and staff alike. As you point out, HUD's workers reflect the diversity of the student body, helping students of color feel more welcome on campus. That doesn't always appreciate that diversity. Harvard is apparently rewarding the important role of these workers by proposing healthcare plan changes, actually cuts, that would raise co-pays and shift costs on the dining hall workers, driving further down an annual average income of less than $35,000 a year. And in the Boston area, an average annual income of less than $35,000 a year is a poverty. You're going to be in poverty. In the event of a strike, members of Local Teamsters 25 will honor and support the dining hall workers' picket lines. Each day, Local 25 members deliver parcels, freight, equipment, and perishables. Good point. I forgot about that. And pick up trash at Harvard University's dining halls. The services Teamsters Survive, although not directly involved with dining service, education, or research, are an important element of ensuring the university runs smoothly. So, in other words, they won't cross picket lines and all that other stuff's not going to get done. That is, by the way, the power of the workers. Think about that multiplied to everything that happens to keep this country running. Workers really run the country but don't control the running of the country, and that is the problem. So keep an eye out for a possible strike of the Harvard University dining hall service workers. If that happens, and if you're in the Boston area, you want to travel here, whatever, please come to the rallies or picket lines in support of those workers. Now we're going to get more into the housing struggle in a minute. First, I want to play another public service announcement. Let me just do something here. And we'll also be talking a little more about the elections and the Democratic Party. Hold on. And this is going to take a minute here. Now, the part about housing, we are going to get into some local rally, but also some of the statistics you're just not going to believe about homelessness, for example, in New York City and all that. I mean, maybe people are inured to those things. It doesn't really make a big impact, but I get shocked every time I read that stuff. And we're going to have a quick musical interlude here as well. So you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio on WMFO 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform, commercial-free community-based radio. Community radio. We're part of that community-based Socialist Alternative Radio. We'll be right back.
Here at WMFO, we like to ask the important questions, such as, why Freeform? Well, it's been our tradition now for 45 years, and none of us here want to see that change anytime soon. Do you? If not, we need your help to keep WMFO Freeform by contributing to our annual donations drive. Anytime before April 13th, go over to donate.wmfo.org to support us in reaching our $5,000 goal. You will even receive a unique thank you gift. To see more about what our DJs have to say about keeping WMFO Freeform, visit facebook.com/WMFO Medford. That's facebook.com/WMFO Medford.
Everybody's gotta die sometime, and we can't save everybody is the best thing we can do.
WMFO, we like to ask the important questions, such as, why freeform? Well, it's been our tradition now for 45 years, and none of us here want to see that change anytime soon. Do you? If not, we need your help to keep WMFO freeform by contributing to our annual donations drive. Anytime before April 13th, go over to donate.wmfo.org to support us in reaching our $5,000 goal. You will even receive a unique thank you gift. To see more about what our DJs have to say about keeping WMFO freeform, visit facebook.com/WMFO Medford. That's facebook.com/WMFO Medford.
Facebook.com/WMFO Medford for more on donating to WMFO Radio. And we're going to go back now to Socialist Alternative Radio. Back to isn't really the right word because we're here. It's me. And we're going to get more into housing issues. And, yeah, it should be, if you know anything about socialism, right, you should know that socialists consider housing a human right. And one of the most horrible things happening that for us, obviously shows capitalism doesn't work, is the increasing intractable crisis of homelessness in the richest country in the world, in the United States, but of course happening all over the world. And I gave that statistic earlier in the show. There are more homeless people in San Francisco than in Bangkok, Thailand, which is a much poorer country, obviously, to give some context. And also to make matters worse, in a place like Bangkok, at least in that place, and that could be changing rapidly, is changing rapidly, if you're homeless, you might be able to retreat back to a rural extended family to survive, whereas not so much the case, or at all the case, really, for homelessness in inner cities, in homeless people in inner cities in America. Sorry for the typing sound here. Housing is a right for those of you who are following online what we're talking about. So anyway, in Boston, which is one of those cities where, you know the conundrum, right? It's like There are some cities where there are jobs available. This is the prevailing wisdom, quote unquote, jobs available. Okay, that sounds good. Let's go get us a job. Well, to get yourself a job, as you know, requires a lot of money because you got to, you know, do certain things and then have the interview and all that costs money. You got to travel maybe, especially if you're going to that place with the jobs and all that. But also it would help if you had an address, a place to live. You know, sometimes that is you definitely need that to even get the job. So how do you scam that? How do you show up without work? Or if you're transferring from a job, have you saved up enough for first month's, last month's realtor fee, security deposit, all that? In places like Boston, places like Seattle, places like San Francisco, New York, where there are some jobs, most of them not so great, believe it or not, meaning you can't really survive on them in that area, then, you know, this moving thing, or if you have to move within a city even in between jobs to, you know, you're sliding down the scale, as so many of us are, to the point where you need, get a job, you know, but you're finding it increasingly difficult to survive. You move into, so you're going to downsize. You're going to get roommates. You're going to have a situation where you, not where you used to, not your own apartment, certainly. And, you know, that, just to do that even, you have to pass credit reports now and so on. I mean, it's just getting really, really difficult for a lot of people to survive. And yet there's, you know, the enticement, the idea, the propaganda that places like Boston, Seattle, New York, San Francisco, et cetera, hey, you can go there and things will all work out. And yeah, for a few they will, but for most they won't. And so no surprise here in the Boston area, which is where the show emanates from, here at Tufts University and Medford, Somerville, Greater Boston, housing is becoming really tough for a lot of people. And a lot of these people are under the radar. You know, if there's an eviction in Jamaica Plain, there's no universities or hardly any universities like right in Jamaica Plain. I mean, there's Northeastern kind of near there and some smaller schools. But, you know, boom, you know, evictions in Jamaica Plain, evictions in Roxbury, evictions in Dorchester. Don't hit the student radar. Don't hit the corporate media radar. But if you know people living in those areas, if you used to live in those areas or whatever, you know what it's like now. So cut to the chase here, the average rent, and you can see different figures on this. This is a relatively mild one. Average apartment, as I'm quoting the Boston Globe, the average apartment rent in Greater Boston is about $2,050 a month. Okay? $2,050 a month. Check out that net amount of money you're making in your paycheck. Let's forget gross pay. Let's forget before tax pay. Let's talk about after tax pay. And if you have access to health insurance or any other benefits that you have to pay for, so-called benefits, we end up paying for a lot of those, then what are you really coming home with, you know, at the end of the day, at the end of the week, at the end of the month? And you're going to put down $2,050 for rent? No, it's okay. I'm just going to live with, you know, five other people in an overpriced apartment. Okay, yeah, a lot of people do that. You know, I did it. It gets to a point where that gets kind of old, you know. And if you want any space to yourself, perhaps a place to create a family, have a family, you know, doesn't work, just doesn't work. And housing is a right for socialists. Housing is a right for people, for humans, but we're taught not to think that. It's a commodity under capitalism, and a lot of people are making money off it. What happens in a city like Boston, at least to a certain extent, this can be overstated, is that there are some working class people that they would come out against rent control, they would come out against improvements to housing because they're making money off of renting an apartment. You know, they live in a triple decker, a double decker. You know, it creates this kind of tension among working class people, people from a higher sort of layer of the working class making money off of rents, living at home and then not having all their money from their crappy jobs go to rent. And so, you know, this doesn't hit all the working class all at once. But many people that thought they had one of those cushy positions of, oh, I own a place and I'm going to make money from the rents, or I live with the rents with the parents and I'm making, you know, I'm doing okay with my crappy job, something changes. change, you know, again, going back to Marxism, dialectical materialism, change, everything is always changing. So there are changes that are going to knock people out of those categories. They go looking for an apartment as if, like, this is what people do. We just go look for an apartment, and we'll find an apartment, and, oop, there's all this stuff that the credit check and whatever, first month's last month's security deposit, realtor's fee, etc. I saw recently in Seattle, somebody, Facebook messaged me from Seattle. They're moving from the south to Seattle. You can imagine what kind of shock that is in living standards. And there's this thing called a move-in fee in Seattle. I honestly don't know a move-in fee. Okay, I think I had to pay that once. And I lived, I just got married. I think we were about to have our first kid. And we moved into this big high-rise apartment in Somerville. Turned out to be a horrible situation. But yeah, I think they had a move-in fee because they assumed that there would be damage done to their building from us moving, you know, our meager possessions in, which, of course, was a joke. It was just another fee. Now, in that case, we didn't have a realtor's fee, so it didn't knock us totally out of the running there for that rotten apartment. We managed to scam that tiny little apartment. Anyway, New York Daily News, September 20th, record number of homeless people in New York. Now, how many times have you seen that headline? You're like, okay, whatever. But no, not whatever. It is ridiculous. It is ridiculous. The think of the financial sector in New York and the amount of money, the amount of value they're sucking from the economy and the amount of money they're making. And you've got homeless people? That's absurd. It's just absurd. Capitalism is freaking absurd. 60,000 New Yorkers are homeless now. 60,000, that's a city in itself. 60,000 people in New York homeless. I don't read that and think, oh, well, that's just the way it is. And that's not because I'm morally superior. It's because I'm a socialist. Because I say, no, it hasn't always been that way. I can remember my own life as a child. Homelessness in the 1970s, for example, was barely on the radar. And I remember being in New York as a young child, and you didn't see homeless people everywhere. You saw, there was Skid Row. There were alcoholics and drug people that were abusing drugs that were like sort of living on the streets, somewhat, not totally, but not all of them, but somewhat. And now we're talking about a whole different thing. We're talking about families, children, people with dependencies. But where does that come from? What, you know, which came first, the homelessness or the dependency, et cetera. Anyway, you get the point. The point is that homelessness is not something that's always been with us. It is new. It is a direct result of the weakening of unions, direct result of the weakening of working class power through unions, the direct result of not having a working class political party to go in and just say, boom, tax on the financial sector. We got enough here to, at least temporarily, until we have to fight again for it, solve the homeless problem in New York. Boom, 90% tax on the super rich. Boom, 40% corporate tax. A real corporate tax. Now, because as you know, as we've explained on the show before, and you can research it yourself, there's a 34% corporate tax rate here in the United States. Do they pay that? No. No, they don't. The effective corporate tax rate is 70% and falling, and to the point where corporations, huge corporations, Apple, General Electric, and so on, pay zero in taxes. By the way, a couple quick little digression here on financial capital. Well, that Wells Fargo thing that just hit, you know, where the Democrats were pretending to really be against the bankers, and there was it was hitting the media about Wells Fargo and all that. You know, by the way, that was one out of three. I was going to say something else, but I'll stick with this. One out of three people in the United States, and I got this from a financial show. I listen to The Enemy quite a bit, believe it or not. I got this from a show, but from a financial jerkwad. One out of three people in the United States has a frickin' account with Wells Fargo. So this isn't just something to watch on TV and forget about. This is hitting people hard. You know, the scandal recently, and I don't know why it's a scandal, it's business as usual in a lot of banks, of getting people to take out extra accounts at the bank. Oh, wait a minute. And if they didn't, then doing it anyway. So people would have six accounts and fees on the accounts and wondering what the hell's going on. And then there's this whole phenomenon in this country, which you probably aren't aware of. Many of my listeners are listeners of people that don't even do banks. Nope, can't afford the bank fees. So we're going to keep the money. Well, I'm not going to tell you where people tend to hide the money, but There's different places to hide your money. And of course, word gets around when you don't have a bank account, if you're in that kind of neighborhood, a poor neighborhood. And next thing you know, someone's breaking in, trying to get your stash of money because you can't afford to be in a bank. And that is a huge freaking problem. People don't even understand is actually out there. Back to the homelessness in New York. Man, 60,939 was the high in 2014, supposedly. Now it's 60,456. I'm so glad they're keeping such accurate account here, when, of course, you know, it's really probably 70, 80,000. And then you have a Democrat in power, of course. You have a Democratic legislature that's been in power while this number has shot up, of course. And there you have it. All right. How does this lead us? Because we have very little time to vote Jill Stein. Well, if you vote for Jill Stein, if you get involved in the Stein campaign, if you think about the Stein campaign and go out and talk to people about it, what you're doing is basically you're getting together with other people that are interested in building a new party of the 99%. And that's what Social Assault Survey is interested in. We're interested in building a political party that would not be part of the corporate oligarchy, which is what the Democratic and Republican parties are. And I don't mean to throw big words at you. Just go to any place where Democrats have been in power without challenge. Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New York. I'm talking about the legislature and even the governorships and so on, for the most part, although there's a token Republican governor in Massachusetts now, who's a complete jerk, but doing all his dirty work with certain Democrats. Basically, we have a situation where despite the rhetoric and of the presidential election, which the corporate media is working very hard to make you think there's a huge difference between Trump and Clinton. And there is a huge difference in approach, and there are differences in policies between Clinton and Trump, absolutely. But guess what? There's too many similarities. There's too many. They've got the same people backing them. Actually, it's interesting. Clinton is getting more support from the financial sector now. It's just been documented. The people I was just railing against in Wells Fargo and so on, they're putting more support behind Clinton than they are Trump. More Republican leaders keep coming out every day. Bush Sr., the latest one, in support of Clinton over Trump, etc. Now, in Social Alternative, we hate Trump. I don't like the word afraid of Trump, but you could use that too, I guess. I'm afraid of the policies Trump would try to enact. We're afraid of that. But we're also well acquainted with the Clinton administration from the past, with Clinton as Secretary of State. We don't ignore international issues. We don't ignore the effects of U.S. imperialism around the world. And this is not a choice in this election for working people. The only choice is to start to build the hard slog, which has already started in a very micro way, but to bring that further into the light, the work towards building a new party of the 99%, a new party for working people. We proved that with Shama Sawant in Seattle, getting her elected to the Seattle City Council. A decent vote for Stein, 5-6%, would show the embryonic forces available to go, and support for a working class party for the people. Despite unlikely to win and all that other stuff that'll be thrown at you by the run-of-the-mill liberal propaganda and conservative propaganda, actually. What we have to be about in this election is building for the future. The two-party duopoly, the Democratic-Republican totally corporate approach to politics, is hurting us directly in terms of everything from the police militarization and police racism to the continued decline of living standards, to the homelessness crisis, etc., the crisis in healthcare, etc. There's no... we're out of time. I can't continue that list of issues and get into each one. We got into a couple today. We'll get into more next time. But the thing to do is stand against the stream, vote for Jill Stein, get interested in the Jill Stein campaign for the issues, but also for the future, for the immediate future. I'm not talking about 20 years. I'm talking about next year, the year after. We need to bring together people that are going to be willing to fight on campaigns and on issues in between electoral battles, but also take up those electoral fights. Again, see Shama Sawant. See socialistalternative.org for more information on that. And we're pretty much out of time here on Socialist Alternative Radio. And we want to really thank the people that that write to us on Facebook. Go to Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook and get involved with Socialist Alternative. Go to socialistalternative.org and find out how you can get involved. Because, again, the purpose of this show isn't just to, give you alternative media and radio and all that. information from like a left perspective. The purpose of this show is not to just rail against capitalism and say there's a socialist alternative. There is. But it's to get people organized, get people involved, support the dining hall workers at Harvard, support the forces working against evictions and homelessness in Boston and so on, and support the fight for socialism. We said in our last show that we were able to get, we were almost able to get $15 minimum wage for the entire city of Minneapolis. The Democrats and Republicans conspired together to stop that. Check out that struggle. Go to 15now.org or 15now in Minneapolis, Min, I think it's called. And you'll have links to that from socialalternative.org as well. So thanks for listening. Keep up the struggle against lesser evilism. We'll get into that more next time. And you know, check out Socialist Alternative. Get involved in the fights. Even if you don't see them at your doorstep, believe me, they're out there happening. And la luta continua, et cetera. So again, thanks for listening. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with another edition of Socialist Alternative Radio.
Men walking along the railroad tracks, going someplace and there's no going back. Highway patrol choppers coming up over the ridge. Hot soup on a campfire in the bridge. Shelter line stretching around the corner. Welcome to the new world order. Sleeping in the car in the southwest. No home, no job, no peace, no rest. Well, the highway is alive tonight. But nobody's kidding nobody about where it goes. I'm sitting down here in the campfire line, searching for the ghost of Tom Joe. He pulls a prayer book out of his sleeping bag. Preacher lights up a buddy and takes a drag. Waiting for when the last shall be first and the first shall be last. In a cardboard box near the underpass, got a one-way ticket to the promised land. In your belly and a gun in your hand, sleeping on a pillow of solid rock, bathing in the city aqueduct. The highway is alive tonight. The way it's headed, everybody knows. I'm sitting down here in the campfire, waiting on the ghost of Tom Joe. Tom said, Mom, wherever there's a cop beating a guy, wherever a hungry and bone baby cries, fight against the blood and hatred in the air. Look for me, Mom, I'll be there. Where there's somebody fighting for a place to stay, a decent job or a helping hand, maybe somebody struggling to be free. Look in the eyes, Mom, you'll see me. Highway is alive tonight. But nobody's kidding nobody about where it goes. I'm sitting down here in the campfire light with a ghost of old time.